Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, it's really great that you have decided to join us. So members of Congress have an awful lot of things on their plate this week before they leave Washington for spring recess. The Senate is expected to confirm Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson as the next U.S. Supreme Court justice. That should happen later today. She will be the first black woman ever to serve in that role. There is, of course, horrifying news still out of Ukraine suggesting that Russian troops were slaughtering civilians, and that is testing our response to the situation. And just yesterday, President Biden signed a bill to overhaul the U.S. Postal Service. Yes, the post office, that institution that has been with us since the founding of our nation, but that has had awful trouble in recent years and decades with funding, with competition from other services who say they should be the ones who ferry things back and forth between our homes and our businesses. This bill to revive our postal service was sponsored by Senator Gary Peters right here in Michigan. Detroit Today senior producer Jake Neer caught up with Senator Peters yesterday just before he went to the White House to watch President Biden sign this bill. Peters and Neer talked all about the post office, its troubles, and its future. Here's their conversation.
Senator Gary Peters, thank you for taking the time today.
Oh, great to be with you, Jake.
So I want, there's a number of things that I'd love to talk to you about, but I want to start with the upcoming confirmation vote for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. We are talking on Wednesday afternoon, so the vote hasn't happened yet, but we are expecting it sometime soon. I'm curious what you are thinking as we approach that vote about, you know, sort of the process so far and this moment in history.
Well, there's no question this is a major historical event. I'm very excited to be a part of it, but I'm just so excited to be able to vote for Judge Jackson. She is an incredible person. She has a distinguished legal career to this point. In her judicial role, she has always been viewed as probably one of the most impartial judges serving on the bench. I had an opportunity to meet with her one-on-one last week and came away even more convinced that she has the experience and the temperament to be a Supreme Court justice. So I think we are very fortunate to have an opportunity to confirm a nominee with her character. I certainly was disappointed, though, through the process. You know, I saw some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle engage in false attacks, personal attacks, some really nasty stuff that certainly I believed were beneath the U.S. Senator and the questions that were asked of her. But all through that, what she did is she just proved herself to be an extraordinary individual, her temperament in dealing with some of the questions that were thrown at her that I thought were off-base and inappropriate. She handled with grace, dignity, and an incredible amount of professionalism. She's just going to be an outstanding Supreme Court justice.
And I'm curious if you're willing to reflect even more on this environment that this has all exposed. I mean, I think we all know how partisan Congress and the Senate is right now. However, you know, I think I saw recently that when Justice Antonin Scalia was confirmed, I believe the vote was something like 98-0 at the time. I mean, it seems like it's a relatively recent phenomenon in American history that these kinds of appointments of judges that legal scholars unanimously agree are qualified for the Supreme Court are being, you know, that there is immense opposition to their nominations. What does that mean to you about the kind of climate we're dealing with?
Well, it's terrible because you're right. Our previous justices, including her predecessor, I think got close to 90 votes when he was confirmed. So we would come together and understand that the Supreme Court is a place where people who are qualified, highly qualified, and are willing to conduct their duties in an impartial and fair manner. That should be the standard. And and coming together in a bipartisan way to confirm individuals like that builds the kind of credibility that the Supreme Court needs. When you think about the framers to our country, the founders, they certainly knew that the Congress would always be a highly partisan body with a vigorous partisan debate. You'd expect that of the president as well. But they also knew that for a democracy to function, there had to be folks who were neutral arbiters with what were going to be very vigorous debates. And the place where that was the third branch of government, the Supreme Court, where people would have confidence that the Supreme Court would objectively look at issues related to a case and then rule based on a fair and just reading of the law. And what we've seen is now, unfortunately, the hyper-partisan partisanship involved in Supreme Court justices. We have some Supreme Court justices now, when they speak publicly, have to tell people that they're not partisan. When you have to start telling people you're not partisan when you're on the Supreme Court, you have a problem. When you have to start saying that you realize that you're starting to lose credibility with the American public. And that's the number one tool the Supreme Court has, is their credibility. So we're in a dangerous time for the court, which is why I think Judge Jackson's nomination was so important, because of her view, the general view that she was impartial, the fact that she has support from legal scholars on both sides of the political spectrum, appointees of Republican presidents in the judicial area have spoke to her qualifications and her temperament. I hope we get some Republican votes for her. We already have a number who have said they will vote for her. And when the final vote is taken, I would certainly hope that she would get broader bipartisan support. But this is a challenging time for our country and a challenging time for the Supreme Court, without question.
Moving on to something else here, of course, you serve on the Senate Armed Services Committee and you chair the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. I want to ask you about the recent news that we're hearing out of Ukraine. Seems like overwhelming evidence of atrocities against Ukrainian civilians on the part of Russia, although Russia is trying to deny that, although it seems like the rest of the world is saying that the evidence, again, is overwhelming. What are your thoughts about that and what the U.S. response should be?
Well, there's no question there's overwhelming evidence that the Russians have been acting in a brutal way. There have definitely been war crimes committed. And without question, Mr. Putin and others who are engaged in those war crimes need to be brought to justice. The fact that Putin launched this invasion to begin with against a country, a peaceful country, and to engage in this illegal invasion and what is basically murdering innocent civilians is simply outrageous, must be condemned, and folks need to be brought to justice. So we will continue to pursue it. I know the president has put even further sanctions on both Russian citizens, as well as strengthening some sanctions on major banks. We've got to do everything we can to try to bring this war to a conclusion. But there certainly needs to be accountability when this is over, without question.
And when you talk about bringing to justice and accountability, what does that actually look like when we're talking about something like war crimes?
Well, certainly, as a war criminal, the international community can take actions. And I think that, you know, right now with what we're seeing from the Russians is that it's going to be tough to find a path in the near term where they can be part of the international community. This is irreparable damage to Mr. Putin is basically subjecting his country to irreparable damage that will take decades to recover from.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, and I'm talking with Senator Gary Peters, a Democrat from right here in Michigan. And Senator Peters, I want to talk about some big news of the day. This is many years in the making. You were the lead sponsor on legislation that would overhaul, in many ways, the U.S. Postal Service. Again, we're talking right now, we're taping this on Wednesday afternoon. I know you're heading to the White House right after this for the bill signing. But for people who don't know, I mean, you know, this is a major piece of legislation that affects every single American that gets mail. But we haven't heard a whole lot in the media about it. So for people who don't know, what would it do and why is it significant?
Well, you're right. It's very, very pleased that President Biden will be signing this legislation into law. And And actually, this reform package and ideas in this reform package have been in the works for roughly 15 years. 15 years with nothing happening as it should. I really took up this cause as the new chair of Homeland Security and Government Affairs, which has oversight of the Postal Service. I've been working on it for a little over a year, close to 2 years, and now it's getting signed into law, which will put the Postal Service on much more stable financial footing. And that's critically important for the Postal Service to continue to do their critical mission, which is to deliver mail to every single address in America. They're the only entity that does that. And it is important for them to have the financial resources to continue to do that and to do it in an efficient way, in a timely way. But they were saddled with some very onerous requirements. One of those requirements was to pre-fund all retiree health care for all of their employees, regardless of their age, even ones coming in their 20s. And I want to be clear, there's no company in America that's required to do that. There's no other government agency that's required to do that. No one does that. It's a huge financial burden that was just put on the Postal Service. We also made reforms such as allowing retirees to be integrated into Medicare when they retire, just like every company in America does, just like the federal government does. And it's important to remember, postal employees have been paying into Medicare their entire career, and now they can be integrated into Medicare. Just those two areas alone will save the Postal Service over the next 10 years. Roughly $49 billion. That's money that can be put into efficient delivery of mail for customers. We've also put in some performance measures. We want to make sure the Postal Service continues to deliver mail 6 days a week, which is critically important for many customers of mail service, especially those who get prescription drugs in the mail that need to have that delivery in a timely way. And we've also put in performance metrics. Right now, the Postal Service, with this legislation being signed into law, we'll post online their on-time delivery standards, or their the actual on-time delivery that they've experienced over the last week in every zip code in America. So as a postal customer, you can see if your mail is being delivered on time and what percentage by your zip code. It's going to be updated every single week. They're going to be able to better have a better handle on how quickly mail is being delivered. And if there are problems in certain areas, make sure that those problems are being corrected. But it'll create the kind of transparency that certainly customers expect from a modern business entity or an entity like the Postal Service. Although it's not a business, it's a service. We want to make sure that they provide that service as efficiently as possible.
And I know you got to get going, but really quick, I'm curious about specific impacts here in Michigan. I'm a lifelong Michigander, but I did live in a state, Alaska, which has an outsized impact on how much they depend on the Postal Service. But what about Michigan? What are some of the big implications here?
Well, it is. It's the same in Michigan. You mentioned Alaska. It is particularly important to rural areas. Rural areas rely on the Postal Service every day, just like all of us who may live in suburban and urban areas. But as I mentioned, you got to have medications are going through the mail. You expect that to be timely. Yeah, paychecks, bills. If you're a small business, the Postal Service allows you to engage in online commerce and be able to ship your products to customers. It's absolutely essential to everyone, but rural areas in particular. And clearly, Michigan is also a very rural state. When you get into northern Michigan or the Upper Peninsula, you will find folks who live in those areas understand how important the Postal Service is to their daily life. And with these reforms, the Postal Service will be able to do their job much more efficiently and better without being saddled with these onerous requirements that no other entity was saddled with. It was simply unacceptable that the Postal Service had to do things that no one else had to do. This will make life better for our postal workers and the customers they serve.
Senator Gary Peters, a Democrat from Michigan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Great to be with you, Jake. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Speaking with Detroit Today, senior producer Jake Neer yesterday, shortly before his bill to overhaul the U.S. Postal Service was signed into law by President Biden at the White House. Coming up, we are going to talk more about that legislation, which is meant to help keep the Postal Service alive and strong for years to come. A couple of experts are going to help us reimagine what a thriving Postal Service could look like into our future. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.